So last week we began Perek Beis of Malachim Beis, but we really just read the first pasuk. So we'll start again and take it from there. Pasuk Aleph. Vayhi ba'alos Hashem es Eliyahu basara hashamayim. It happened that when Hashem took Eliyahu up in some type of whirlwind to the heaven, vayelach Eliyahu ve'Elisha min el Gilgal, and Eliyahu and Elisha were traveling from Gilgal. So we had mentioned that the first opening words is kind of like a heading, that the theme of this perek is going to be the aliyah, the going up of Eliyahu to the Shamayim. But in the context of that, there is going to be another significant event taking place, namely the fact that Elisha is on the scene and that we're going to be crowning Elisha as the next. Leader of the spiritual leader of Klal Yisrael, at least of the Malchus Yisrael, taking over for Eliyahu. We had mentioned, I think, that why are they going from Gilgal? Gilgal is a place of significance, and it's going to be the first of four stops that they make. The first of four stops that they make to go ahead and finally have Eliyahu go up to the heavens. And the first stop is Gilgal. Each stop is going to be something that's considered to be significant. And it appears that the Mefarshim explained that Eliyahu was given some type of a command that he would be taken up to the Shemayim, and he did not know where it was going to happen. So he knows what's happening, he doesn't know where it's happening. And he's kind of guessing. And in his guessing of where it's going to happen, he thinks it must be in a place of significance. And so in the three places the four places that he visits, each one has significance in Jewish history. Gilgal is significant in that it was the first place that Klal Yisrael came after they came into the land with Yehoshua. The first place that they stop in Eretz Yisrael is Gilgal. That's the first place where they set up the Mishkan. And it's also the place that Shmuel chose when he wanted to publicize the fact that Shaul was being selected as the king. Shmuel chose the town of Gilgal, so Gilgal had some type of significance. And so they go to Gilgal. Pasuk Beis. Vayomer Eliyahu el Elisha. Eliyahu turns to his student Elisha and says the following. Shev na po. Please stay here. Ki Hashem shelachani ad Beis El. Hashem has sent me to go to Beis El. So I'm leaving Gilgal. It's in the Mefarshim understanding that Eliyahu saw that whatever is supposed to happen, this idea of him being taken up to Shamayim, did not happen in Gilgal. So kind of strike one. And now he feels the need to go to Beis El. It's not that Hashem necessarily told him to go to Beis El. It's that Hashem put him on a mission to be going to this kind of final destination. And his next selection is Beis El. And he's telling Elisha, don't come with me. You stay here in Gilgal. I'm going to Beis El by myself. Vayomer Elisha, and Elisha responds right back, Chai Hashem v'chai nafshecha, by the life of God and by your life. Im ezveka, if I will forsake you, if I will leave you. He's taking an oath by the life of God and by the life of Eliyahu, which is definitely putting Eliyahu in good company, mentioning Hashem first, obviously out of respect, but basically taking an oath that I'll never leave you. Vayeredu Beis El. And the pasuk ends that they're going down to Beis El. Why is it that Eliyahu did not want Elisha to come with? So there are at least two answers. The first answer seems to be hinted to by Rashi, that Eliyahu understood that what's about to happen to him is going to be quite unique in human history. That we've had a lot of great leaders, we have a lot of great even prophets, but what's about to happen to Eliyahu is quite unique. The fact that he's going to be taken up in some type of, as far as we know now, a whirlwind we're going to see, it's a chariot we're going to see, there's fire involved, it's quite miraculous.
Did he know that?
Eliyahu knew that some miracle is going to happen. He knew that he's going to be taken from this world. That's what the Mefarshim seemed to say. And that's almost, that's not why the Perek opens up with the heading of Vayihi Bahalos, Hashem es Eliyahu, because we know that the Tanakh was written hundreds of years later by Yirmiyahu HaNavi. It is a little telling that they put the top, they put what happens as a heading. But Eliyahu seems to know that something's up. He didn't necessarily know everything, but he knew it was going to be miraculous. And Rashi's of the opinion that Eliyahu just didn't, he was humble, and he didn't want anyone to witness this great spiritual event that was going to take place. And so he's commanding his young, we don't know what young, but his attendant, Elisha, not to come with. That's one approach. There's another approach, which the Mitzudos Tzion takes, in that perhaps it was a test to see if Elisha was really loyal to Eliyahu. We're going to see that this same setup of Eliyahu being in one location where he thinks the miracle is supposed to take place, then telling Elisha, stay here because I'm going to the next location where I think the miracle might take place, to which Elisha then jumps up and says, I swear by God's life and by yours, I'll never leave you. And then they go together. So it seems that there's another approach that Eliyahu was kind of testing Elisha's loyalty. How loyal is Elisha? Elisha is about to be the one who's going to take over, and we know the end of the story. The end of the story is Elisha does take over. In the setup of our tradition, Eliyahu gives over the Masorah to Elisha. So the question is, how would Eliyahu know that he's making the right choice? Obviously, the choice comes from Hashem, but he's the one here. He's the one playing, not playing, he's the one involved in the worldly affairs, and he's giving over to his student, kind of in the way that Moshe gives over to Yehoshua. So the question is, how does he know? So it could be that he's testing. He's testing his loyalty. Is he willing to go with him wherever he goes? And it's almost reminiscent of Rus and Naomi, because while Naomi was not testing Rus, she was not testing Rus, but the fact that Naomi said, I'm going, and I don't want you to come with me, and then Ruth says, no, I'm coming with you. So that forever and ever gets sealed as one of the greatest acts of loyalty, the loyalty of one to another. And so that's what happens here. Vayer du Beis El. So now they go to Beis El. Now, why are they going to Beis El? So again, going according to our thesis that Eliyahu knows something miraculous is going to happen, but he has to pick a spiritually uplifting place. So Beis El, on the one hand, historically is spiritually uplifting, currently is not. Historically, Beis El is the location where Yaakov had his famous dream. When Yaakov had his dream, so the Midrashim talk about the fact that Hashem either like folded up the world, so he was in Beis El, but he was also on the Makom HaMikdash, but he originally went to sleep in Beis El. When they read about the Psukim, it talks about Beis El, and when he wakes up from his dream, how does Yaakov refer to Beis El? He says that this is Shahar HaShamayim. He says that this is the, quote-unquote, the gateway to heaven is in Beis El. And it could very well be that that's maybe even how the name Beis El came to be. But so Beis El had some historical significance. Currently, it was a city of Avodah Zarah. And so it appears that he never actually goes into Beis El. But he's traveling, and if you're looking at a map, it seems that he starts in Gilgal, going further south is Beis El. And this is his next possibility. Pasuk Gimel. Vayetsu b'nei ha-Nevi'im asher Beis El el Elisha. There were b'nei ha-Nevi'im, literally the children of prophets, but it means prophet students, students of prophets, that were in Beis El, and they came out to Elisha. All the Mefarshim that I saw understand that these are proper Nevi'im. That we've reached a stage, we've advanced since the days of Ahav and Izebel, where prophets weren't allowed to be around, and any of the prophets that were in hiding, except for Eliyahu. Prophecy has, in the end of the days of Eliyahu, prophecy has become more popular. And so these B'nai Nevi'im, who we consider to be fine, come out of Beis El, by Yetsu, they come out, which that's probably why the Mefarshim understand that Elisha and Eliyahu never went into the city, because these individuals are coming out. They're coming out of the city. And they approach Elisha, A question that you might have that I don't have an answer to is, why is there, we're going to see a conversation between them and Elisha, but not them and Eliyahu. So where is Eliyahu? Because right now I'm thinking Eliyahu and Elisha are attached at the hip, that they're always going to be together. And yet here in the conversation, it seems very clear that these B'nai Nevi'im are coming out of Beis El, and they're talking right to Elisha. So where's Eliyahu? We don't know. So Vayetzu B'nai Nevi'im, Pasuk Gimel, Vayetzu B'nai Nevi'im El Asher Beis El El Elisha, Vayomru Elav, they said to Elisha as follows, Hayadata, did you know? Ki Hayom Hashem Lokeach Es Adonecha Me'al Roshecha, that today Hashem is taking your master from upon your head. Vayomer, Elisha answers back, Gamani Adati, I know, I also know this, Hecheshu, be silent, stop talking about it. Definitely an odd placed pasuk. These B'nai Nevi'im were now proving that they're proper Nevi'im, because they know that today is the day that Hashem is taking Eliyahu from this world. How do they know that? They had prophecy. They're not from the most famous of prophets, and this is something that we've discussed a number of times, that during the time where Klal Yisrael was privileged to have prophecy, there were many people who attained certain levels of prophecy. But kind of just like scholarship, there are people who know a little bit of Chumash, and you can know a lot of bit of Chumash, and then you could be Rashi and write a commentary on Chumash. There are different levels of knowing Chumash. There are different levels of intellectual pursuit. There are different levels of spiritual pursuit. There were different levels of being a Navi. Moshe Rabbeinu, we just had in this past Parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu was considered to have the highest level of Nevuah, of all Nevi'im that ever lived, from the time of Adam and Avram until the time of Mashiach. It's one of the Rambam's 13 principles of faith, that the way that Moshe Rabbeinu had prophecy is different than any other prophet. He was the Av HaNevi'im. So these B'nai Nevi'im, they had certain levels of prophecy. There's a little bit of a debate amongst the Mefarshim. When they turn to Eliyahu and they say, look what's happened. Did you know that today Hashem is taking your master from upon your head? So when they turn to Elisha and they're referring to Eliyahu as Elisha's personal master, so what does that mean? So some of Farsha mean to say that they were viewing Elisha as a lower level prophet, and they were viewing themselves on a similar level to Eliyahu. Right or wrong? They were viewing themselves on a similar level of Eliyahu, and they were talking down to Elisha. And they were saying, your master, meaning to you he's a master, to us he's a colleague. And they were that's one way of explaining. The other way of explaining is not necessarily talking about who was higher in level, but they're already recognizing that there's something unique between Elisha and Eliyahu. That already, but we're going to see that they're going to see it very clear as the parak develops, and as Eliyahu leaves and Elisha emerges as the next prophetic leader. But it already seems that the seeds are already there to some degree, that they recognize that Elisha is the leading student. Now, why it is that they're so forward in their discussion? It doesn't seem like the proper way to say hello. Do you know that your master is going to be taken from you? Did you know that? So if he didn't know that, doesn't sound like the way you want to tell him. Not the way to break such news. And if he did know, what's the point? And his response is, yeah, I know. Hecheshu, be silent. This is not something public. Going with what Rashi said before, the same way that Eliyahu didn't want this to be so public, so his student, Elisha, is continuing in that theme of saying, listen, our master, Eliyahu, he doesn't want this on the front page of the paper. He wants, this miracle is going to happen. We're going to let the miracle happen in a more modest, in a more tzina type of manner. Yeah? Me'al Roshecha, so it could very well be that we're going, it actually is going to be some type of ascension. Meaning Eliyahu is actually going to go up towards the sky. It seems that I don't think they're necessarily referring to that. it's more of figuratively saying that your master is being taken from upon your head. Well, they were not. The relationship was not one of master and servant. It was more of prominent person and attendant, teacher and student. And so the usage of the word of Adon, it's not, you know, trying to depict some type of master role, but it's not a full like master and slave. So the phrase Me'al Roshecha. Listen, maybe they are, if they did have prophecy, maybe they are referring, it literally is going to be Me'al Roshecha, and we're going to see, they're going to be walking together, and all of a sudden, Eliyahu is going up, and Elisha's staying where he is, and literally, he's Me'al Roshecha. So there might be some type of, you know, the Tanakh is foreshadowing by telling us that this miracle is actually going to happen above head. So that definitely is a possibility. I think on the surface level, it's just an expression, and we're going to see they use this expression again. This same happening repeats itself again. So here we have. So now they've gone from, they've started in Gilgal, and the miracle did not happen there. They went towards Beis El, somewhere outside Beis El, and the miracle does not happen there. Pasuk Dalet. Vayomer lo Eliyahu. Eliyahu turns to Elisha and says, Shevna po, stay here. Here being near Beis El, where they were located. Ki Hashem shalachani Yericho. Hashem has sent me to Yericho. And I want to travel to Yericho myself, and I want you to remain here near Beis El. Vayomer, and Elisha responds, Chai Hashem, by the life of Hashem, v'chai nafshecha, by your life, Eliyahu, ime ezveka, if I would forsake you, v'yavo Yericho, they come to Yericho together. Again, similar pattern of either going with Rashi's approach of saying that Eliyahu wanted this miracle to happen in private, or taking the approach of the Metzilas Tzion, that it's a further test, right? You know, you can believe that a miracle is happening, but this is already strike two, the miracle hasn't happened yet. So maybe Elisha is beginning to shake in his resolve to stay with Eliyahu. So Eliyahu tests him again, and again he passes. Again he says, "I swear by your life, by Hashem's life, I'm not leaving you." And they come to Yericho. Why are they coming to Yericho? So Yericho was the first city that was captured by Yehoshua when they came into the land, and it was captured in a pretty magnificent, miraculous manner. And so it's something, and what did that miracle show? That miracle showed the Jewish people that they have the ability to conquer this whole land because they have Hashem on their side, and therefore it's a sign of Hashem's endearment towards Klal Yisrael, and so it's another possible location. We're going to see mention of the inhabited an inhabited area of Yericho. We know that when Yehoshua conquered Yericho, he was told that he wasn't supposed to build there. We're going to see that there are going to be inhabitants of Yericho. It's perhaps right next to the, you know, kind of the ancient Yericho. There was a populated area of Yericho, which we'll see make mention of towards the end of the parak. So they come to Yericho, and the same thing happens as happened when they came to Beis El. Pasuk Hey. Vayigshu b'nei ha-nevi'im asher b'yericho. The b'nei ha-nevi'im, another group of students of the nevi'im themselves, came close to Eliyahu and Elisha. These nevi'im lived in Yericho, so they come and approach Elisha. They come to Elisha, and again, they're going to engage in conversation with Elisha. How they're doing that without Eliyahu there, we don't know, but. There's a moment in time where they're separated. By Yomrei love, they turn to Elisha and they say the same thing. Hayadata, did you know? Ki hayom Hashem lokeach es adonecha me'al roshecha. Did you know that today Hashem is taking your master from upon your head? By Yomer gamani adati. Yes, I do know. I also know. Hechashu, but be silent about it. The same dialogue taking place again. And perhaps it's trying to explain to us that there were many prophets that existed at the time, and that is going to make the selection of Elisha all the more meaningful. Meaning, if there only was one prophet around after Eliyahu's going to leave the world, if there only is Elisha, so we understand why Elisha is going to be the one chosen to be the head prophet for Klal Yisrael, there's nobody else. But it seems that all these Nevi'im had certain levels of Nevuah, and in that atmosphere, in that environment, Elisha is going to be the one to be chosen in a very clear fashion. So far they've went to three places, and in each of the three places, we've been not successful in bringing upon the miracle. They went to Gilgal, they went to Beis El, they went to Yericho. Pasuk Vav. Vayomer lo Eliyahu. Eliyahu turns to Elisha. Shev na po. Stay here in Yericho. Ki Hashem shalachani hayardena. Hashem is sending me towards the Jordan River. Vayomer, Elisha answers back. Chai Hashem, by your life Hashem, v'chai nafshecha, and by the life of Hashem, by the life of you, Eliyahu, imezveka, if I will leave you. Vayelchu shnehem, and they went together. And here, this is the last time that Eliyahu said those words of, stay here, because I need to go. And Elisha answers back, no, I swear I'm coming with you. The fact that it ends with the words, Vayelchu shnehem, that's a phrase that's used elsewhere in Tanakh of being totally unified. Avram and Yitzchak, after the Pasuk kind of hints to the fact that Yitzchak, it first says Vayelchu shnehem, that they went, but then the Pasuk hints to the fact that Yitzchak realized what's happening. When Yitzchak realized that there's no animal being involved, and yet they're going up for a sacrifice, and Yitzchak realized that it was him, and still the Pasuk repeats again, Vayelchu shnehem, that they went together, shnehem b'mindset echad, with one mindset they go. And so here, the fact that after three times, especially if we're going to go according to the approach of the Mitzvah Tzion, that it was a test, so it was three times the test, three times you passed, finally, Vayelchu shnehem, they went together. It's Eliyahu realizing that, yes, I have a loyal disciple, Elisha, and we can go together as one unit. And they're going to the Yarden. So why are they going to the Yarden? So the Yarden had a lot of significance. The fact that Klal Yisrael had to cross over the Yarden to get into Eretz Yisrael, and it was a miraculous crossing. There was a splitting of the Yarden, just like there was a splitting of the Red Sea. And so the Yarden was somewhat significant. We're going to see here that there's going to be another crossing of the Yarden, that Eliyahu and Elisha are going to cross over the Yarden, and the miracle is going to happen on the riverbanks of the Yarden, but on the eastern side. And so on the eastern side of the Jordan River, we're going to have a leader of Klal Yisrael, a spiritual leader of Klal Yisrael, hand over the leadership to the next spiritual leader of Klal Yisrael. There was another time in history where on the eastern side of the Jordan River, we had one leader of Klal Yisrael giving over to the next, and that's Moshe to Yoshua. Moshe never got a chance to go over to the west side, right? The West Bank. Why is it called the West Bank? Because it's on the west side of the Jordan River. It's not really west. From when we're visiting Israel, right? You land in the airport. If you want to go to the West Bank, you have to go east. It's west because it's west of the river. Moshe Rabbeinu never got to the west side of the river. He died on the east side of the river. He appoints Yoshua on the east side of the river. And that's another similarity. We already pointed out previously some similarities between Moshe and Eliyahu. They're both kind of alone. Eliyahu very much seems to be alone in his mission to be a Navi to Hashem. And Moshe Rabbeinu also seems to be alone. That's this past week's Parsha, the fact unique and also just alone. The fact that we don't hear about Eliyahu being married. We don't hear about Eliyahu having children. Moshe Rabbeinu, this past week's Parsha, we hear about the fact the whole episode with Miriam was because Moshe Rabbeinu had separated from his wife, given the context of what he was doing and the mission that he had with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he was, in a way, Moshe Rabbeinu was alone. They both obviously had very significant prophecies take place at Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu receives the Torah at Har Sinai, and a number of prakim ago, we saw that since since the time that Klal Yisrael was at Har Sinai, Har Chorev never had any role in Jewish history, except when Hashem takes Eliyahu to Chorev, to Har Sinai, and he has a prophecy there. And in the context of preparing for that prophecy, we're told that Eliyahu didn't eat for 40 days and 40 nights. Guess who else didn't eat for 40 days and 40 nights in a context of a prophecy at Har Sinai? Moshe Rabbeinu. And so this bringing over to the other, bringing to the Yarden, has spiritual significance and has connection significance and then succession significance. We think about the importance of Moshe to Yehoshua. There's going to be great significance going from Eliyahu to Elisha. And so they're on their way to the Yarden together. Pasuk Zion. V'chamishim ish mibnei ha-neviim polchu. There were 50 men from this group of the students of the Nevi'im who went along. Presumably, they were the ones from Yericho. That the ones from Yericho kind of escorted them towards the Jordan River. Vayamdu mineged merachok. But they recognized that they need to stop at a certain point. And they stood kind of opposite Eliyahu and Elisha, but merachok, from a distance. Ushnehem amdu al hayarden. While Elisha and Eliyahu are standing right at the feet of the river. So these, seemingly for our purposes right now, these other 50 Nevi'im seem to be in good view of whatever is going to take place, within good physical view of what's going to take place with Eliyahu, and they're just at a little bit of a distance. Pasachas. Vayikach Eliyahu es adarto. Eliyahu takes his mantle, his cloak. Vayiglom. It's an interesting word, vayiglom. It's not a common word in Tanakh. The Metzudas Tzion and Metzudas David and the Radak, everyone translates it as a type of folding over. What does the translation say?
Rolled it up, wrapped it together.
Again, some type of folding, wrapping. There's a phrase in Yecheskel, the Metzudas Tzion says. He's going to use his cloak, which is a piece of clothing, to strike the water and split the sea. So it's in the middle of the pasuk. I'm not ruining anything for you. So normally, right, historically, when you want to split a sea, you use a stick. Right? Anytime previously where you wanted to split a sea, namely Kriyas Yamsov, use a stick. Here he's rolling up his cloak and he's going the next phrase, Vayake es hamayim. And he struck the water. Vayichatsu heina vehena. The water split apart here and here. It split apart. Vayavru shneim becharava. Pasuk finishes that the two of them crossed over on dry land to, as I mentioned, the eastern side of the Jordan River. The Kli Yakar explains that he folded this the word. Gimel Lamed Mem is like the word golem, which is not just a Yiddish word, but is a Hebrew word for a kind of lifeless body. That's where it comes from, the folklore about the golem in Prague. And so the Kli Yakar explains that he folded his mantle, I guess it was big, this big cloak, and he folded it almost to be in the shape of a person. And he struck the Yarden with this shape to see how wide would the Yarden open. That if the Yarden would open the width of one person, then Eliyahu realized that Elisha is not on the level to come with him, and he's going to go on this final journey alone. And if it would open up wide enough that two people could walk, then he would know that Elisha could come along, and it opened up for two people to cross. It's very significant, even if you don't want to take that explanation of the Kli Yakar, it's clear from the pasuk that the mechanism for splitting the sea was a cloak and not a stick. And it's going to be significant because this cloak is not going to disappear with Eliyahu. This cloak is going to remain, and this cloak is going to become, is going to belong to Elisha. And he's going to wear, eventually he's going to be wearing the mantle of his predecessor, of his teacher. And that's very significant. Right, literally. And so the fact that it's the item used to cause this great miracle is significant because we're going to see that this item plays a significant role and definitely provides the imagery of such a role. Right? The way, right, you it's almost like the... When Shaul HaMelech allowed for David to go fight against Goliath, so Shaul had this idea that he would take off his armor and David HaMelech would wear all of the armor of Shaul to go ahead and fight against Goliath. And that has a lot of positive symbolism to it of, you know, David somehow continuing from Shaul and things of that nature in a positive way. And David puts on the armor and then David takes it right off. David says, I'm not used to going in this armor. And David takes off the armor of Shaul and ends up going to fight against Goliath with nothing but his knapsack, a slingshot, and a rock, because David was not following in the ways of Shaul. It's the opposite of what's happening here. David was going to carve a path very different than Shaul. David was going to found a monarchy that would be everlasting. We're all hoping for Mashiach ben David, that David, Melch Yisrael Chai V'Kayim, that David's legacy went on. This is the exact opposite, where this Elisha is going to be able to continue, and this mantle, this Adares, is going to play a significant role, and it's the Adares that caused this great miracle of the Jordan River, splitting. So now, they're on the other side. Pasuk Tes. Vayihi ke'avram, it was when they crossed over onto the other side. Ve'eliyahu amar el Elisha, as they're crossing, or right after they crossed, Eliyahu realizes that this is his last few moments in the current state of existence. We had discussed last time what Eliyahu's state of existence becomes, and that's a matter of debate, but it's the last moments of his current state of existence where Elisha is going to converse with him. And so Eliyahu turns to him, Amar el Elisha, says to Elisha, She'al ma es elach, b'terem elakach me'imach. Ask from me what I can do for you. I'm granting you one request before I am taken away from you. Right? So here, when if we want to compare it to the way the Bnei Nevi'im said, did you know that your master is being taken from upon your head? Here, when Eliyahu is doing the talking, no, I'm being taken from you. Without the imagery of being upon his head. But Rebbe to student, I'm giving you one request that you could ask. What that means, because we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about what Elisha actually requests and then Eliyahu's response. But a question that I didn't necessarily see discussed is what is Eliyahu's intentions in offering this request? He's going to give him a blessing. This is like a bracha. It sounds like, you know, he's asking, you know, what's your wish? That it's not necessarily in Eliyahu's power to grant a wish. We're going to see that to some degree, Elisha asks for something proper. And it's almost reminiscent, this scene is almost reminiscent of Shlomo HaMelech. When Shlomo HaMelech, we read way back when in the beginning of Malachim Aleph, that when Hashem comes to Shlomo HaMelech in his first Nevuah, and Hashem says to Shlomo, Shlomo, I'm willing to grant you anything that you want. What do you want? And amazingly, the 12-year-old boy asks for Chachma. And Hashem says, not only will I give you Chachma, I'll give you the other things as well. But that's when you're having a conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Hashem has the power to give you whatever you want. L'havdil, you know, you rub the genie, you rub the lamp, you can ask the wish. Hashem can grant it. The fact that Eliyahu is saying, what do you want? I don't necessarily know what's behind it. Could be it's some type of blessing, some type of bracha, divrei bracha, that the Rebbe would give to the students. In here, it's the student. We have places in the, we mentioned in the Pirkei Avos here on Shabbos, we quoted a Gemara about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that upon his deathbed, his students asked the Rebbe to give them a blessing. So it does happen. Yaakov Avinu gives brachas before he dies. Moshe Rabbeinu gives brachas before he dies. There's definitely a paradigm for such. So what does he answer? Vayomer, in the middle of Pasuk Tes, Vayomer Elisha. Elisha answers back. Vihina pishnayim biruchacha alai. That there should be two times your spirit upon me. Literal translation. I should have twice your spirituality. What does that really mean? So there are a number of approaches. One is that Rashi hints to the fact that he was asking that he should have twice the level of prophecy that Eliyahu had. So again, we talked about the fact that prophets have different levels of prophecy. So whatever Eliyahu had, Elisha is saying, I want two times what you had. You ask me what I want, that's what I want. That's one option. Another option is that Elisha was asking that in your lifetime, my teacher, you performed a certain number of miracles. I want to be able to perform double the amount of miracles as you. And one of the examples that's given by some of the Mefarshim is that Eliyahu brought one person back to life. And we're going to see Elisha brings one person back to life and also cures someone who had tzaras. Someone who has tzaras, the Gemara refers to as not being alive. So the fact that he cures him, he did two times. The third explanation, which focuses on the word pishnayim, where else do we have the word pishnayim in the Torah? Pishnayim is used in reference to the firstborn. The firstborn, in terms of the laws of inheritance, receives pishnayim. What does it mean, pishnayim? A double portion in relation to how many other portions are being given out. So when it came time to divide up Eretz Yisrael, so the Bechor for dividing up Eretz Yisrael was considered to be Yosef. Reuven lost it. It was considered to be Yosef. So why all the other tribes got one piece of land, Yosef got two pieces of land. There was his son Ephraim and his son Manasseh. Ephraim and Manasseh were treated as regular tribes under the umbrella of Yosef, that Yosef got an extra portion. Mathematically, that's if the inheritance is being divided four ways, so the Bechor, you divide it, if there's a Bechor, you divide it five ways, with the Bechor taking two. So the Bechor, if there are four, let's say there are four sons, and one of them is a Bechor, so the Bechor is getting 40%, not, and the other ones are only getting 20, and that equals 100. So that when he's saying Pishnayim, Elisha is recognizing you have many students. You have many students who are going to inherit your legacy. I want at least an extra portion. I want to be your student who inherits your legacy more than everyone else. Not necessarily double, but a double portion of what you're giving over. But it all seems to be focused on his words, which include the word biruchacha, your spirit. These are all spiritual requests, which on the one hand is very laudable, and the fact that he's asking for something that has to do with spirituality and ruchnias is very positive. But it's also very challenging for Eliyahu to guarantee any of this. Okay. Okay, speak louder so they can hear you across the world.
This is like a very touching part of the planning, I think. And what he's asking, you know, it's like a conversation. And two beloved people have to separate. And Elisha realizes this is a terrible separation. And he's asking, like, I want, like, double of you. Holding up. I want to... I don't think it's like a visit. I want more. You know, it's not, sounds so cold.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Okay.
You see, later on, it's so heartrending. My father, you know, like he said, and also when she says, if you see what's happening to me, if you can understand, then you will be on a certain level without bargaining.
Definitely possible.
Definitely
possible.
There
you go. So he answered. So truth of the matter is the answer of Eliyahu you could take according to all the mafarshim, including Mrs. Leibowitz. Pasuk Yud. Vayomer Eliyahu responds, Hikshisa l'shol. You've asked something very difficult. You've made a very difficult request. And if we're going with the last thoughts, if you're asking to have more of me, that's impossible. This is our relationship is coming to an end in the way that we know it. But also in all of these spiritual requests, so this is a tremendous, you know, I hope to remember this pasuk as a source. When it comes to spirituality, it's not about the blessing that someone's going to give you. It's not about you have to earn it on your own. I mean, if you're going according according to the first pshat that Elisha wanted double the amount of prophecy, double the level, well, you have to work on yourself and you have to be on that level to receive that level of prophecy. Prophecy is not a gift. Prophecy is only given to those people who are worthy of it. And even according to if you want to be the one who's going to perform double the amount of miracles, well, you have to be worthy of such. And ruchnias, spirituality, is going to be something that's rooted in yourself. If you don't accomplish it yourself, then it's all dependent on you. My Rebbe, Rabbi Schechter, tells a story that when he was first married, so he and his wife for a couple of years they couldn't have children. And so they decided they'd go to Eretz Yisrael to get some brachas from people. So he went to visit the Stipler Gaon, the famous Reb Chaim Kanievsky. So his father was the Stipler Gaon in Bnei Brak, and the Stipler Gaon was very hard of hearing. He could not hear very. He was basically deaf. And so if you wanted to converse with him, you had to you would write down on a piece of paper and give him the piece of paper, and he would then he could speak, and he would kind of yell back at you. Because that's human nature. If you can't hear, you speak louder, like on the train. So Rav Schechter went there to buy a sefer. He wrote Svarim, the Kilas Yaakov, and you would buy a sefer. So he went to buy a sefer, and he asked for a bracha about children, and he gave him that bracha, and then he asked them for a bracha of success in learning. And the Stipler yelled back at him, there's no such thing as a bracha for success in learning. You want to be successful in learning? Learn. you'll be successful if you learn. So you want to be successful in ruchnias, there's nothing you can do. You have to do it yourself. There's nothing I can do. However, Eliyahu provides slight words of comfort. He says as follows, basically according to the Mefarshim, he's saying, I don't know how to guarantee anything. However, Vayomer hikshisa l'shol, it's a hard question you're asking of me, a hard request. Im tire osi, lukach me'itach, yihi l'chachin. If you are on the spiritual level to see my departure, to see me taken from you, then it's an indication that which you're requesting of me will be granted of you. And at least going according with the classical mefarshim that it had to do with levels of spirituality, we're going to see that the other Bnei Nevi'im, even though they were in relative close proximity, they were at a distance, but it was close enough that you physically could see, they weren't able to physically see the spiritual sight of Eliyahu being taken. So Eliyahu is turning to Elisha and saying, if you're going to be able to visualize and see what's happening to me, that's already an indication that you're kind of on the way to having this high level of spirituality. V'im ayin. But if not, if you won't be able to see what happens, lo yeh. It's not going to be. This request that you're making of me is not going to be part of reality. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayehi hema holchim haloch v'daber. It was as they were walking and as they were conversing. They were conversing. The Gemara in Tainus says they were conversing about Divrei Torah, and that's why they were not damaged by the fire that's about to pass them. As they were walking and talking, v'hine rechev esh, a chariot of fire, v'susei esh, drawn by, led by horses of fire, Vayafridu bein shnehem, this spiritual chariot made of fire separated the two. Vayal Eliyahu, and Eliyahu ascended basa'ara in a whirlwind hashamayim to the heavens upon this chariot. And according to the Mefarshim that we spoke about last week, the two main approaches were either that Eliyahu Hanavi did not go to the next world in a physical body, but this chariot of fire on its ascension actually consumed his physical body, and it was just his neshama, that is just his soul, that goes up to heaven. Or the other approach, that no, this chariot's job was to actually take Eliyahu in a physical body and deposit him in another location where unknown to the rest of man. More dramatic. It's quite dramatic. I'm not sure. So you're allowed to go with that shot. That's fine. makes it a little easier to realize how he's going to everybody's house on the Seder night. But whatever. So it happens suddenly. Pasuk Yud Beis. The Elisha Roe. And Elisha was watching. Elisha saw. Which on the one hand is a good thing, because he was just told that if you're able to witness it, that's a good indication. But that's obviously blurred in the eyes of Elisha. B'humitzachek. Elisha cried out, screamed out, Avi, Avi, my father, Rechev Yisrael, the chariot of Israel, Ufarashav, and its horsemen, Veloro Od. He couldn't see Eliyahu anymore. He couldn't see the image of this chariot any longer. Vayechazek Vivigdav, he took hold of his own garments, Elisha, Vayikaraim, and he tore them, Lishnayim, into two, Kiraim, to two tears. So, he's very emotional. He refers to Eliyahu as a father. And truth of the matter is that a Rebbe is considered to be a father. It's something that, until you meet a Rebbe who makes such an impact on you, it's hard to envision that a Rebbe is like a father. And the Gemara even talks about, the Mishnah is talking about cases of, let's say, your father loses a lost object and your Rebbe loses a lost object. Whose lost object do you return first? And do you toil with first? And the Gemara comes to the conclusion that your Rebbe, because your father brought you into this world, but your Rebbe brings you into the next world. So when you meet such a Rebbe, you can understand and appreciate that Gemara. When you're in 10th grade and your Rebbe tells you this Mishnah, you'd be like, they're like, Rabbi, not a chance. Which I take a little bit of comfort that they're feeling that they have a close relationship with their father, which is a good thing. But when you come in contact with a Rebbe who makes a mark on you, so then you can understand what Chazal say, that a Rebbe is considered to be a father. And Elisha, who we know Elisha had a very close relationship with his parents, relative to how relationships work, the fact that he put an emphasis when Eliyahu came to Elisha and said, hey, it's time to come with me, he says, hold on, I have to go back to my parents and say goodbye properly. So it's a small, minute detail that the Tanakh lets us in on, that Elisha did understand the value of biological parents, but that didn't mean that he could also view Eliyahu as a type of father figure. When he refers to him as the Rechev Yisrael, he's calling Eliyahu a chariot. He's not referring to the chariot that he went on. He's referring to Eliyahu as a chariot. So the Targum, which the Radak quotes and Rashi quotes, that he realized what the greatest part that Eliyahu had was Eliyahu's tfilos, that Eliyahu offered to Hashem, kind of like a chariot that went forward from Eliyahu on behalf of Klal Yisrael, and he was bemoaning the loss that Klal Yisrael now has, that its chariot, the one that would deliver messages from this world to the next, was now being taken away. He grabs hold of his garment and he tears his garment. The Gemara learns from here that when a person has a Rebbe Muvak, when a person has a Rebbe who teaches them the majority of their Torah, when that Rebbe passes away, the person should tear kriya. The person should tear kriya like they lost a close relative, lishnayim, and it should be torn into two. It should be torn the type of tearing that can't be repaired. And we learn that halacha from this instant. There are, you know, unfortunately the feeling of people to their Rebbe isn't always that they feel that it's their Rebbe, Rebbe Muvhak, Rebbe Soloveitchik. I think in the book that Rebbe Rakefet wrote about him, the Rav, so he quotes from him that he said in one of the Yahrzeit drushas, he said, "I didn't learn most of my Torah from my father," and he goes on, he lists like 19 masechtas that they learned together. You have to imagine that they learned quite a lot of it. But he said that what he learned from his father taught him how to read between the lines. And his father taught him how to discern things from that which he learns. And that he considered his Rabbi Soloveitchik considered his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, to be his Rebbe Muvhak. When a couple of years ago, when Rav Eliashiv Zatzal passed away, so Chaim Kanievsky, who was his son-in-law, considered him to be the Gadol Hador and his Rebbe Muvhak, Rav Chaim tore Kriya. It's halach in Shulchan Aruch that if a person feels that they have a Rebbe Muvhak and that Rebbe passes away, that they should tear Kriya, just like for a relative. And the Gemara learns it from right here, from this piece. Like a main teacher. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayarem es aderes Eliyahu asher nafla me'alaf. Elisha picks up the mantle, the cloak of Eliyahu, asher nafla me'olav, which had fallen from him. And I thought the language of asher nafla me'olav, it's kind of poetic, because you would expect that this aderes was Eliyahu's, this was his thing, this was his cloak, this was one of his ways that he would even be recognized as a Navi. We saw when Ahav's son, Ahaziah, he knew, based on a description of Eliyahu, he knew what Eliyahu was. Eliyahu had a certain way. And you would expect that Eliyahu would have had that with him when he goes up. And according to the approach that everything got burned up, so it would get burned up. According to the approach that he got deposited somewhere, so it's with him wherever he was. No, it was Naflam. It kind of fell from him. It's a remnant. It's a remnant of Eliyahu. And Elisha picks it up. And Elisha is now in possession of this aderes, this mantle. Vayoshav vayamod al sfas hayardein, and he returns, Elisha returns to stand at the bank of the Yardain. He's standing at the bank of the Yardain, and he needs to get to the other side. He wants to go back to Israel proper, to Eretz Yisrael proper. So how is he going to get to the other side? So he has to seemingly repeat that which Eliyahu did. He has to split the waters with this mantle, right? So now Asher Nafla Alav, it didn't just fall. This was the mechanism that Eliyahu used to split. And so in the beginning of Pasuk Yedalid, Vayikach es aderes Eliyahu, Asher Nafla Me Alav, Vayak es hamayim. So Elisha takes the cloak, takes the aderes that fell, again, asher nafla me'olav, that fell on its own. Vayak es hamayim, and he struck the water. Vayomer, and he said, Ayei Hashem Elokei Eliyahu. Where is Hashem, the God of Eliyahu? That's strange. Eliyahu never said anything. When it came time for Eliyahu to split the Yardain, he just struck it and it split. So the Mefarshim all explain here that it didn't split. So you have to imagine the drama, at least from Elisha's perspective, that here he is, he saw his Rebbe be taken. And here he's got the mantle, right? Let me just follow the steps. I don't mean to make it so simple. Let me take... And they're 50 watching. Now what they saw, they kind of just see Eliyahu vanish. And they don't necessarily know what happened. But here they see Elisha holding the cloak, and Elisha goes and strikes the water, and nothing happens. And so Elisha begins to daven. And that's where it's Vayomer. He says, Aye Hashem Elokei Eliyahu. Where is Hashem, the God of Eliyahu? Af hu, also he, or he too, Vayakes Amayim, struck the water, Vayechatsu Heina Vehena, it split into two, Vayavar Elisha, and Elisha passed. So a little bit of an ambiguous phrasing of the Af hu. Vayakas Amayim. Who struck the water to allow for the water to split the actual time? The beginning of the pasuk, it clearly has to be that it's Elisha, right? The beginning of the pasuk is Vayikach Aderes Eliyahu, and he took the cloak of Eliyahu. He has to be Elisha. Vayomer, and he said, he has to be Elisha. He's referring to God, the God of Eliyahu. It's still Elisha. Now all of a sudden it's Afhu. And the end of the pasuk is Vayavar Elisha. So the end of the pasuk mentions a subject, Elisha. But this second, the second half, right? The second starting from the word afhu, it's a little ambiguous. So it could be that it was actually Elisha who split it, who hit it again. But there's some mafarshim to explain that Eliyahu came back. Eliyahu came back in whatever form you want to say he came back, and it was Afhu, he too. Meaning the same one who split it the first time, split it the second time, and allowed Vayavar Elisha, and Elisha passes over. There's a Gemara that talks about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires the tefillos of the righteous, and so it, going according to maybe the consensus approach, that Elisha was always going to be the one who splits the Yarden, but it wasn't going to come easy. He was going to have that moment of frustration. And how does he deal with that moment of frustration? He immediately turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the fact that he refers to Hashem as the God of Eliyahu, that's not necessarily a problem, right? How does Yaakov refer to God? Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, the God of Abraham and the God of my fathers, V'shem Avosai. Right, so here he just called him his father, the God of Eliyahu. That's not. There's nothing derogatory. We're just not used to it because it doesn't like come into our tefillos. So he turns to Hashem in prayer, and then Hashem answers Vayakas Amayim. He strikes the water, and then it finally worked. Well, the question is going to, you know, his career is only getting started, and so we'll stop here for tonight. What we need to do is, until this point, we've gone through the story from the perspective of Elisha, but now we're going to enter into perspective of those disciples who have been watching. What have they been watching, and how are they processing what they're watching? So we'll get to that, God willing, next week.